Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello to our Ivy Podcast listeners. As always, thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Ivy Podcast. I am your host, Angela Alberti. This episode is part of many of the different episodes that we are launching this year that is a special series all oriented with female empowerment. That's exactly who I will be sitting as somebody that really empowers female across the board in our unique industry and just across many different industries. Leslie, can you give a brief intro on yourself?
Hi, Angela. Thank you so much for having me. And I really appreciate you featuring all of the women in our industry, the amazing women who are partnering together to rise one another up, including you. Leslie Vickery, I am the CEO and founder of Clear Edge Marketing. I also co-founded a women in tech group called ARA. It stands for Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. And we have around 6,000 people who have been part of the program over the years.
Well, so excited. Leslie, admittedly, you are somebody that I've followed since I've been as long as I can remember in this industry. And I really am excited for the listeners to tune into today's episode. I think we're going to reach on many different topics that could really reverberate with the female audience, but with all audiences from all different walks of life. Before we get into it, though, do you mind giving us a little bit of a background, a career timeline, if you will, of what's led you up to the founder and CEO title that you have with Clear Edge right now?
Sure, thank you. So it's interesting. I was just interviewing someone before this who graduated from college and has been having a hard time finding a job, and she's waiting tables. And she said, I'm kind of embarrassed by that. And I said, don't be embarrassed by that. I actually, when I graduated college, my very first job was waiting tables out of college. And, you know, you find gap years, gap times, different experiences. And for me, that was like the first stepping stone into really finding myself, which is really important. So my timeline is probably different than a lot of other people. So we'll say was supposed to be broadcast journalism, turned into waiting tables, but then quickly thereafter went to McDonald's Corporation and really got my start in communications and writing. So my passion is writing, telling other people's stories, and really being able to capture the essence of whether that be messaging for internal audiences or external in PR. From there, however, I took a turn and went from big company to nonprofit junior achievement. And then I dipped my toes in technology. And quite frankly, that's really when I found my home, which was in the recruitment industry. So I started back in 98, and I'm proud to say it. I've been part of the industry for a lot of years with Interim, which became Sphereon, and eventually Randstad, and I ran marketing for the technology division. After that, if you fast forward through my Sphereon days and joining another company, I saw kind of a niche and a need in the industry for more thought leadership type marketing and CMO level thinking that relates to the business, and really an opportunity for an industry that traditionally underinvests in marketing to be able to properly invest in marketing by outsourcing it. So I believe we were one of the first to market 16 years ago now for our industry to offer those kind of outsourced marketing services. And that's really how Clear Edge came to life at that time.
Wow, what a cool timeline. And I love how you really hold true to the humble beginnings of you waiting tables. I think there's a couple of different similarities that we have. First, I didn't know that you were a broadcast journalism major. So very cool to hear that. And it really is amazing to see how you've taken that progression within your career and developed Clear Edge. You guys have really done a fantastic job about holding the reputation and really becoming the SMEs around the marketing space within this ecosystem. But it all started out with you identifying a need, and suddenly you found yourself in the position of founder and CEO. If you have any of those listeners that are tuning into today's episode that is looking to take the leap of faith into entrepreneurship, What would be some of that advice now that you've got some years under your belt? What were some of the lessons learned?
Oh my goodness, so many lessons learned. And yeah. ClearEdge was the first company that I started. Now my husband and I have done a couple of adventures on our own too. One, I would say, first of all, I didn't always dream, Angela, of being an entrepreneur. So people ask me that all the time. Was this always your vision? It really was not. However, what I realized over time is that I actually grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. So it wasn't a huge leap or risk or something mysterious to me. It was just something that I knew I could do. I grew up with my grandmother and her sisters had opened up clothing stores in Detroit, children's clothing stores, and I grew up in the stores. I saw my dad then run them. I guess I just had this innate understanding that if there's a need and a market and people are willing to pay for your services and you have that expertise and people trust you, that you should just go for it. So I may be a little bit different than other entrepreneurs in the sense that I did not have a business plan. Mm-hmm. I did not know how to run a P&L. I had never really sold before. I was in marketing. Now I partnered closely with the sales organization, but I wasn't in sales per se. I had a lot to learn. So I would say the very first thing was, one, I was never afraid to take the leap. Fortunately, I was single. I didn't have any children, like a lot of my own personal responsibilities. So financially, I could pull it off and I knew I could always, you know, do something different if I needed to. So the fear never kept me out of it. And I knew I needed to take that leap and make that opportunity. And I wasn't afraid to ask for help. So I didn't let the fear overcome kind of the joy of what could be ahead of what I saw as that vision and that future. And I knew, hey, as long as you ask for help, you'll be in good shape. So those were kind of two things that I think a lot of people hold themselves back on is I'm not ready. I've got to have that plan and reiterate. And sometimes it makes a lot of sense to do that, especially maybe in technology or other areas. But for me, it was as easy as just kind of doing it.
Yeah, just taking the leap of faith and knowing to put everything aside and go for it, go with your gut. That is the hardest part in this. And I think it's awesome how you've had almost this generational impact within you. It was a fire in your belly, but it was you seeing your grandmother, your father growing up within that space, going through the ins and outs of it. So many of those things that morph us into the people that we are today really transcend itself into the professional and the leader that we choose to be today as well. So that's really inspiring. I think it's pretty fascinating though. I mean, the late 90s up until now, if you think about marketing within this space, it's always carried a sense of antiquated notoriety. It's not really been up there with the other industries. So I'm sure that you've seen quite a few things and y'all really have been at the forefront about changing the notion within marketing for this space. But what are some of those ideas and those trends that you've seen more recently that really get you excited when it comes to workforce ecosystem, staffing, trends, recruiting? What do you think is exciting right now?
First of all, just the emergence of technology in our industry is so incredible. If you think of all of the companies who have come along in the last 5 to 10 years, even the last year, I feel like every day there's a new company. I don't know if you've looked at Talent Technology Labs and their ecosystem, but they have this beautiful document that continues to grow, but it's this visual that shows all of the technology that's available from a talent perspective, and it's in every different phase of technology. That excites me a lot. If you think about it, to me, we're in the best possible place we can be. Every company needs talent, mm-hmm. even staffing companies, and every yeah. single company needs technology. So what better place to be other than in talent and technology? And if you think about the way consumers have evolved in their use of technology, that is where our industry is going as well. So the more we can focus on the consumer behavior and how everyone's using their phone for just about everything in their lives and really think about whether it be the candidate experience and I would argue the client experience of working with you, there's so much potential for what we can do. And I love, Angela, that It's interesting. I am one of the judges for ASA's Women in Leadership Scholarship Program. And at the one of the last questions people ask is, what would you change about our industry? And one of the things almost to a application people will say is the reputation of our industry. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, we've been able to really make some great strides through the way we think about and invest in the candidate experience and the client experience and our own teams and the training and the experience for the recruiters and the sales team and so forth, that we're able to forward our own reputation and really be seen as not a necessary evil, but someone who can move a company forward. And quite frankly, that's the same thing with marketing. We are not just tchotchkes and event planners and sell sheet creators and proposal supporters. We can really help move a company forward. So in essence, marketing for us is in that same kind of stratosphere, I would say, as our own industry when it comes to talent and technology.
Wow. Very well said. That's pretty exciting to hear about all of the innovations that's happening within the technology space and how it's truly lending itself within the talent space, and knowing just how vastly different the psyche is of the candidate and the procurement needed to really curate proper talent pool channels across the board. Now, I'd love to hear more about the organization that you've created when it comes to women in tech, and taking it a step further, what was the inspiration behind starting it?
So you are referencing ARA, which again stands for Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. I actually co-founded it with two of my best friends, Megan McCann and Jane Hamner. We all go way, way back, many, many years in friendship and working together. And you know, the premise of it originally was us attending an event and being the only women really out of, let's say, around 150 people at a dinner. And after the dinner, everyone kind of retired to the bar and they were drinking cigars or smoking cigars and drinking scotch or bourbon or whatever. And we just kind of looked at each other. At the time, you could actually smoke cigars in the bar. And we thought, you know, we don't really belong. And we decided to start this dinner group, and it's the Chicago Executive Women in Technology Dinner. And it started with the three of us. We each invited someone from our own networks, and they invited someone, and it ended up over the years growing into around 350 women who would attend throughout the year these different dinners that we would host. And during that time, what we found was a lot of the women we were working with were in unfair work environments, not being treated fairly. They were the only women on the teams, and when having children and families, bowing out of technology. And we were having a lot of these executive women come to us and say, we want our up-and-comers to experience what we have found in this group, because it's really changed our lives and our careers to meet other people and to know that we're not alone. And we thought, you know what, let's keep this dinner, but let's start a mentoring program. So the premise originally was around mentoring and allowing people, it could be reverse mentorship, peer-to-peer mentorship, whatever, traditional mentorship, whatever that meant, but just an opportunity through mentor matching and events to find someone. And really our intention was, we want to keep you in technology, we want to retain you, and we want to advance you. So how can we kind of bridge that gap by sharing really open conversations and dialogues that people weren't really talking about at the time, and, you know, putting ourselves out there, being very vulnerable and sharing our own personal stories, so they would, again, feel like, gosh, I can be a mentor to someone, even though maybe I didn't think I could be, and how can I help that next generation to rise them up and encourage, you know, there's Girls Who Code, there's all these organizations. How can we encourage people when they're reading the headlines? Why would they want to go into tech? We wanted to encourage them to look beyond the headline and really come into an industry that, you know, we had hoped would be willing to change and change together.
That's very inspiring. And shout out to Megan McCann, because I did have the awesome opportunity to sit down with her as well. Yeah. And she is going to be part of this series. So fascinating to hear how you guys leveraged a moment. And it all kind of stems back to your original point and how you started the company. And really it just comes down to taking that leap of faith and knowing that there's just disparate and maybe uneven, I guess even notorious approach when it comes to females in technology and looking to be the difference, right, behind the lens. And kudos to you on what you guys have been able to build, because how many members are part of this group now?
So we've had over 6,000 people who, wow, either at the time were part of the mentoring program or attending events. So originally when we founded it, obviously it was pre-COVID, we were doing a lot of in-person events. So we would do at least 25 probably events a year across the U.S. and we would sell out everywhere we went. So in Chicago, we could easily get 400, 450 people at an event. It was just, you know, one of those things where it was the right time at the right place. People needed it. It's kind of like I always say, the hope needs you and then you need the hope. And we really needed each other at the time. So it was just great time. And by the way, it's for women, but men and women were involved. We definitely, we even had all male panels at the women's events. Like we wanted to have full perspective on what it meant to keep women in technology and advance them. And the only way that we're able to make change is through our allies. And our number one ally has to be obviously women supporting women, but also men helping us as well.
That's I think it's flooring to know that you guys have in some way impacted the lives of 6,000 men and women within this industry. And it almost, you know, really evolved into staffing and recruiting and in this industry in general, because there is something very sacred about what this industry does as a whole and hopefully turning to something positive when it comes to the livelihood of candidates and workers across the board. So kudos to you guys. Later on towards the end of the episode, I'll definitely ask on how we can get more information for Aura. But I think what you mentioned when it came to the formation of this group is a perfect segue for my next question. And when it comes to commonalities on what you've noticed that has helped or hinder women in leadership or in a professional capacity, can you give us more insight into what you've seen when it comes to the leadership morphing that women have had in the professional space?
Sure. So Angela, it's been fascinating. And as you know, I also host a podcast called The Edge, yes, and it features executive women in recruitment. And when I get asked that question, I really look at, you know, what are some of those commonalities that women have? And, you know, one of the biggest things is the confidence piece and imposter syndrome and not being our own best champions. And really, I think about some women on the podcast who have said, you know, I just didn't ask. I just kind of kept waiting for my promotions and things to happen, but I would see the men fast track right past me. Or if they didn't, you know, if they spoke up and said something about something happening within their company, you know, not positive things that would happen to them. So a lot of women opting to leave their jobs and leave their roles and kind of setting them back in some cases, in some cases pushing them forward, but just being able to have the confidence, find your voice ultimately, and be your own best champion are some of the kind of more personal things. I would say putting yourself in a succession seat and always asking the question as far as, you know, what you can do to better yourself and learning, especially if you enter into a company, what does that succession seat look like? And right, make sure that there's an opportunity for you, if not there, that they'll help you get to that point, even if it means leaving that company and going somewhere else. It's very important to rising up. And then also putting yourself in a role in a position where you're learning how a company operates. It amazes me how many people in general don't understand the basics of what makes even a staffing company profitable or successful. You have to understand the ins and outs of the business and how to run the business to be able to keep getting promoted up into the company. So understanding, you know, what is a P&L? How does it work? What are the financials of the company? Even if you're not in a role where you're responsible for that, get a mentor and understand it. It's so critical to being able to rise up. So hopefully that answers your question, but there's so many things. I would say at the end of the day, it's really being your own best champion, using your voice and having the confidence to go for it.
Yeah. And can I just say, wow, I think that I have found myself in almost every single one of the examples that you have given, primarily with the confidence piece. And I'm not sure what it is. I think I find that we often like to wear many different hats and we take things on more than we can. And then usually when we are in boardrooms or in leadership positions, it's more often than not, as statistics have shown, around a group of very dominant male counterparts, right? And really finding whether or not you are meant to be there, or this questioning of your general, what you lend and bring to the table. So personally, I think that there's a lot that I'm taking from that. So thank you for that, Leslie. That's been wonderful to hear, and some great feedback. I'd love to hear about, you know, you've got so many things happening with ClearEdge and Aura, and then Together We Rise, which has been just a fantastic form of bringing together women. Can you give us a little bit more about how the book was started and the group of women behind it?
Sure. Well, we'll just do a quick plug. So here's the book, yes. Together We Rise, and all the amazing authors who kind of came together for the book. And it's interesting where you mentioned confidence. So for me, my chapter in the book, and each of us kind of talk about a chapter, and I'll circle back with how the book came together. But I often talk about the evil DJ and this song that keeps playing around in your head, where it's like, I'm not smart enough. I'm not pretty enough. I don't belong here. Why am I here? And that's what I focus a lot on. So it's been really interesting for me, this journey, because I can talk about marketing and business all day long. When it comes to talking about myself and then really going deep to understand, you know, where does that lack of confidence come from? And what does my evil DJ keep telling me that I need to shut off and change that song? And how do I need to work on it? And that's one of the things, Angela, that's fascinating to me in this, is that people look at a lot of us, you and I probably included, and say, gosh, these are thought leaders in our industry, and look at how successful they are. And what they don't always often hear is what it took to get there, and that we're all still working on it every single day. I work on it every single day. Our prep for this, I had you run me through the questions again. Let's talk about this again. You know, we all are working on it all the time. So these amazing women, we came together originally to support Joyce Russell, who is the president of ADECO's U.S. Foundation. At the time she was running North America for ADECO, she had launched her own book, Put a Cherry on Top, and we were celebrating Joyce in Miami during Executive Forum. It was March 2020. So I was hosting the dinner and pulled together an amazing group of women who are now in the book. And we were supposed to come together to celebrate Joyce and the launch of her book and the success of her career. I look at Joyce and I think, gosh, she has probably single-handedly helped more women into the C-suite than any other person in our industry. So talk about leaving a legacy. She's someone to celebrate. Unfortunately, COVID hit. The conference was canceled, and we did what everyone was doing, and we turned to Zoom. And we had a Zoom meeting to basically do a virtual celebration and have Joyce just share about her book and how it came together. And on that call, someone said, you know, we should do a book club. Now, mind you, this is the beginning of the pandemic. We're all kind of panicked. Some of us, you know, obviously being an entrepreneur and in an industry panicking, I'm then panicking. We had new women who were CEOs of global companies, some publicly traded, others who were starting Lauren Jones, her own company, right? I mean, literally Executive Forum was her kind of company debut. So you had all of us coming together at a time that we were kind of living in fear of not only our jobs and our careers, but our lives and our families' lives and what was happening at home. So the book club really was a monthly gathering where we felt safe to talk about anything and everything. We invited authors, of course, to come because it's a book club. But we also did really fun things. We hired a chef to cook with us. So we made lasagna together. We did workouts together. We did other breakout groups where I would bring in subject matter experts. So if someone was, you know, wanting, you know, new to, hadn't even been through a downturn as a CEO, Who could we bring in to help them? Other experts in the industry just to share trends and whatnot. So we really just came together and bonded in a way. We were there personally and professionally. We ended up buying services from each other and really just supporting one another in a way that I had never experienced in my career, and a lot of women haven't experienced from other women either. One of our authors heard our story, and you can see it when we're together. It's like this sisterhood of just love and joy for one another and being there for each other. And she said, you know, you all should write a book. So that's what we did. Just like the book club idea, when we said yes, we had no idea what we were getting into. We all said yes. I have to tell you, I think I pulled it back from the printer two or three times. Am I okay being this vulnerable? And come to find out, we were all texting and calling each other, most of us, you know, nervous. What if I put this out there? Now I'm really putting myself out there. But we knew we had to do it. We knew it would make an impact for men and women and daughters and sisters and nieces and nephews, like anyone reading it could learn and grow from it. So we felt compelled to put our stories out there. And again, it's a story of women coming together, but the individual stories are each our own stories of our own journey. And we each kind of pick different themes to cover.
Wow. Wildly inspired. I feel like just refreshing. First to, you know, I want to thank you just for sharing the vulnerability that you shared. I think it's very critical, especially for the younger working women population that's coming from a generation of throes of social media their whole life, and this comparative self-assessment to the likes of which you and I maybe beneficially were never a part of. So just knowing that, and I'm hopeful that those that are listening in can know that it's okay to feel that way. And really something that just came out of a very dark moment in our lives with the pandemic, because let's be honest, it was dark for everyone. And what you guys have been able to build off of that. And I personally had a chance to meet many of your co-authors, to sit down in some of those sessions, especially the more recent one at SIA. And it is truly powerful and touching to hear about and read the stories, but more so how you guys came together through this sisterhood to make something really positive out of a dark moment. So kudos to you guys, truly. And as I'm hearing everything that you've got going on, I think one of the more difficult areas for me, at least, admittingly, is balance and knowing how the heck to balance everything. And you know, as we were going through our prep session, you mentioned this on household order and work-life balance, and none of us have this figured out, right? But what has worked for you?
Well, it's still a work in progress. And by the way, coming out of the book, something that's really important for everyone to understand is we all can do what we did.
Yeah.
Not to oversimplify it, but it really was. And if you think about ARA and the dinner group and all of these things, ASA and Thrive and TechServe and bringing women together, it's really just coming together and being there for one another. And that can be one-on-one conversations like this, or it can be parts of groups, but it's there. You just have to put yourself out there, which is one of the hardest steps. And that's something that holds women back. So when you say like balance, a lot of women will say, well, I have a family and I've got my job, and they don't network as much. And then inevitably what happens is if there's a change in their life from a work perspective and they don't have a network, or it's only a network within their existing company, they find themselves having to make up for years of not putting themselves out there. So it's really important for me. One of the biggest things I do is just being a connector, a networker and connector, and trying to connect and bring people together is so important. But I haven't figured out the balance piece, Angela. It's so important. I run a company of almost 60 people, and I try to lead by example. And my leading by example works for me, but it may not work for everyone. And that could mean I really am passionate about being healthy and working out. It's something that is critical to me. And I'll give a quick example. My husband and I have this philosophy, and we have this philosophy of co-CEOs in the house. And one, we have a son, and to me, it's extraordinarily important for him to see equality in the home, because I do believe it starts in the house. So co-CEOs, that means that we are there for each other equally. if that means dropping off, picking up, all of the activities, cooking, cleaning, laundry, whatever all of the stuff is, we have to be equal partners in that. And that also means that if I don't do something up to his standard, he really shouldn't say anything. And if he doesn't do something up to my standard, I don't say anything, because we're just trying to be there for each other. But yeah. I remember after Grayson was born, I, again, CrossFit, running, now we live in Colorado, mountain biking, hiking, whatever it is, I've got to get in a workout. And fitting it in can be really tough. And I remember after having Grayson, I would get upset because Colin always fit in his workouts. He could get in whatever it was that he needed to do. And I, on the other hand, because I have long hair, I have really curly hair, it takes me a while to get ready for work. We've got to be camera ready, all of these things that he didn't need to worry about. I mean, of course, he needs to be, you know, whatever, professional on camera. But my point is, one morning I remember waking up, and instead of being upset that he could get it all in and I couldn't, I simply asked, do you mind if I go running first? Because we obviously couldn't leave Grayson at home. He was an infant by himself. So I said, do you mind if I go running first? That way I have time to get my run in and get showered and get ready and spend time with Grayson and be ready for work. And his answer was, of course. So sometimes even in our own lives, we just have to ask and just put ourselves out there to ask that simple question. But for me, I lead by example. Angela, I try my best. So I work out just about every day. I am there for my son to help and be present every single day, unless I'm traveling for work, of course. But even on those days where, you know, quite frankly, you know, I cry like everyone else. I may be missing him, or he cries on FaceTime with me. I've shortened trips before. I mean, it's not perfect, but you have to find what's right for you. Having a support system is critical, and asking for help, just like in business. I have to do that for the balance of work too. I run a DE&I group in our industry. I sit on a lot of boards. I'm doing a lot of speaking engagements. Learning to say no is important, and really focusing on areas that, you know, fill your cup and make you happy, but, you know, are also making an impact are important. I mentioned lead by example because I want my team and those around me to feel like they, almost by me acting this way, me taking vacations and completely disconnecting, me not working certain hours or, you know, on weekends or whatever, me doing different things. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not always working or that I don't work late at night so I can spend time with my family earlier in the day. But it means that that works for me, and I want to give them permission to do what works for them. And I always say, as long as it doesn't impact our company, it doesn't impact the team, and it doesn't impact our clients, you do you. Do what works best for you. This is what works best for me. And if that means working out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that's what I'm going to do. That makes me happy and whole and a better CEO, a better role model, and a better wife and mom. So that's what I do. It's not perfect. It's perfectly imperfect.
Perfectly. It's perfectly imperfect. And I know. Yeah. And it really holds true to just knowing what your own individual stride and cadence is going to be and sticking with it. I think it really reverts back to you, the individual, and focusing on what fills your cup. For you, it's gym time. It's being a part of these different boards, because it probably makes you very happy to do that. And it's networking and connecting people, and knowing, going back to just the individual and how that makes you whole. And I think that's going to be step one and knowing how to balance it all. So thank you for that. You know, as we're wrapping up, wow, what a powerful show. But as we're wrapping up today's show, one of the things that I mentioned before we press record is your content diet. And this is a very delicate world. There's a lot of different content that we can consume. And I've had the great chance to sit with many amazing leaders like yourself. What does your content diet look like?
Oh, thank you. First of all, I just want to say you have to give yourself grace in all things life. And that includes the content diet, because we don't all always have time to read and listen to podcasts and watch the latest, you know, episodes, you know, binge Netflix, whatever it may be.
I am awesome at ordering books, right? But just reading them all the time.
I'm a huge step. I know. It's so hard. Well, being part of a book club helps, because even if you can't read the book, Almost every author has YouTube videos, podcasts. Brené Brown's a great example of that with Atlas of the Heart. You can listen to podcasts on it, you can watch a special on it, or you can read a book on it. Just about every author is creating content in multiple ways. So depending on how you best consume, if it's audiobooks while you're running, walking, folding laundry, whatever that may be, then that's what you should do. But to give yourself grace, because there isn't always a lot of time to do that. But I listen to podcasts while I'm riding my bike or running, safely try to do that. So listen to podcasts and audiobooks, and then just try to find the time to read as much as I can. And again, I'm not the best at it, at keeping up on it. So being part of a book club has really helped me ensure that happens, all of the time. And then just asking people, what are you reading? What are you listening to? And having dialogues and conversations to kind of pick up different things can help. But again, it's almost like Cliff Notes when you're, when I was in high school, if you remember those. But yeah. Fortunately, you can consume content in so many different ways now that it makes it really easy to be able to do it if you find something you're passionate about and enjoy. Most of my reading is quite frankly like self-help. I love Brené Brown. I listen to other podcasts, We Can Do Hard Things. I love Armchair Expert, Erica Keswin, and Rituals. There's a lot of authors out there who are really fantastic. So
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you set the right precedent when you said just no, you don't have to do it all. Just give yourself grace. No. Give yourself grace. Yes. GYG. Yeah. That's going to be the new acronym out of this episode.
So. Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's so important in all things life. And if you do have time, this is a great book you can read.
Absolutely.
A little final.
Together we rise, guys.
Yeah. Read a chapter at a time. Mm-hmm. So a CEO I really admire was saying, even if you just read 10 pages a day of a book, like just set yourself like mini goals of something to do, and you'd be amazed at how much you can accomplish by doing that.
I think half of it is just the consistency to do it, right? That's all it simply takes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. That discipline is so vital. So where can we find you? Where can we find more organization on Aura and Clear Edge? And gosh, where do we get in touch with you?
Well, thank you. LinkedIn is probably the best place. And again, it's Leslie Vickery, V-I-C-K-R-E-Y. Aura is Aura Mentors. It's aramentors.com. And Clear Edge Marketing. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you and definitely connect and keep the conversation going.
Well, so Leslie, thank you so much for your time today. This was truly an inspiring episode. I know that a lot of people will be inspired out of listening to it as well. And first and foremost, knowing that all of the amazing strides that you've taken can really be attainable to that average everyday listener that is tuning into today's show. So thank you for providing a little glimmer of hope as well in this sometimes dark world that we're living in. So thank you. And thank you to our listeners too.
Angela, thank you for providing the platform. We really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Okay, guys. So we'll see you on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.